It's 1:30 a.m. in the morning, the time when most people are asleep. Your neighborhood's in a complete darkness, except for a few street lamps. Someone, he doesn't identify himself, and the voice isn't familiar to you, is pounding on your front door madly, demanding that you open up. Your heart begins racing. Your stomach's tied in knots. Adrenaline is pumping through you. You fear that it's an intruder or worse. You not only fear for your life, yourself, but the lives of your loved ones. The aggressive pounding continues. It becomes more jarring with every passing second. Desperate to protect yourself and your loved ones from whatever threat awaits on the other side of that door, you scramble to grab something, anything, that you might use in self-defense. It might be a flashlight, a baseball bat, or that licensed, registered handgun you thought you'd never need. You brace for the confrontation, a shaky grip on your weapon, and approach the door very cautiously. The pounding continues, however. You open the door to find a shadowy figure aiming a gun in your direction, aiming at you. Immediately, you back up. You retreat further into your apartment. At the same time, the intruder opens fire, sending a hail of bullets in your direction. Three bullets make contact with your flesh. You die without ever raising your weapon or firing your gun in self-defense. In your final moments, you get a good look at your assailant. It's the police. This is what passes for knock and talk policing in the American police state today. Knock and shoot policing might be a more accurate term, however. Whatever you call it, this aggressive, excessive police tactic has become a thinly veiled, warrantless exercise by which American citizens are coerced and intimidated into talking with heavily armed police who knock on their doors, believe it or not, in the middle of the night. Poor Andrew Scott didn't even get a chance to say no to such a heavy-handed request before he was gunned down by the police. It was late on a Saturday night, so late that it was technically Sunday morning, and 26-year-old Scott was at home with his girlfriend playing video games when the police, the cops, in pursuit of a speeding motorcyclist, arrived at Scott's apartment complex because a motorcycle had been spotted at the complex, and police believed it might belong to one of their suspects. It was 1:30 a.m. when four sheriff's deputies began knocking on doors close to where a motorcycle was parked. The deputies started their knock and talk with apartment 114 because there was a light on inside. The occupants of the apartment were Andrew Scott and Amy Young, again, who were playing video games. First, the police assumed tactical positions surrounding the door to apartment 114. Guns were drawn and they were ready to shoot to kill. Then, without announcing that he was a police officer, one of the cops banged loudly and repeatedly on the door of apartment 114. The racket caused a neighbor to open his door. When questioned by a deputy, the neighbor explained that the motorcycle's owner did not live in apartment 114. It didn't belong to Andrew Scott. Sadly, this information was not relayed to the police officer stationed at the door by his fellow officers. Understandably, alarmed by the aggressive pounding on the door at such a late hour, Andrew Scott, retrieved his handgun before opening the door. Upon opening the door, Scott saw a shadowy figure holding a gun outside his door. Still, police failed to identify themselves. The police did not tell him. Unnerved by the sight of the gunman, Scott retreated into his apartment only to have the cop immediately open fire. The cop fired six shots, three of which hit Scott and killed him, who had no connection to the motorcycle or any illegal activity. So who was at fault here? Was it Andrew Scott, who was prepared to defend himself and his girlfriend against a possible late-night intruder, a killer, a burglar? Was it the police officers who banged on the wrong door in the middle of the night, failed to identify themselves, and then, without asking any questions or attempting to de-escalate the situation, shot and killed an innocent man? Was it the courts, which not only ruled that the police had qualified immunity against being sued for Scott's murder, but also concluded that Andrew Scott provoked the confrontation by retrieving a lawfully owned handgun before opening the door in the middle of the night? Or was it the whole crooked system that's to blame? I'm referring to the courts that continue to march in lockstep with the police state. The police unions, that continue to strong-arm politicians into letting the police agencies literally get away with murder. The legislators who care more about getting reelected than about protecting the rights of we the people. The police who are being trained to view their fellow citizens as enemy combatants on a battlefield. And the citizens who fail to be alarmed and outraged every time the police state shoots another hole in our Constitution. What happened to Andrew Scott was not an isolated incident. It's happening all across the country. But here's the rub. Whether police are knocking on your door at 2 a.m. or 2:30 p.m., as long as you're being asked to talk to a police officer who is armed to the teeth and inclined to kill at the least provocation, you don't really have much room to resist, not if you value your life. Mind you, these knock-and-talk searches are little more than police fishing expeditions carried out without a warrant. The goal is intimidation and coercion. Unfortunately, police departments are increasingly shifting towards pre-crime policing and relying on dubious threat assessments, behavioral sensing warnings, flagged words, and suspicious activity reports aimed at snaring political enemies of the police state. Thus, we're going to see more of these warrantless knock-and-talk police tactics by police when they attempt to circumvent the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement and prohibition on unreasonable searches and seizures. We've already seen a dramatic rise in the number of home invasions by battle-ready SWAT teams and police who have been transformed into extensions of the military. Indeed, with every passing week, we hear more and more horror stories in which homeowners are injured or killed simply because they mistook a SWAT team raid by police in the middle of the night for a home invasion by criminals. Never mind that the unsuspecting homeowner, shaken from his sleep by the sounds of a violent entry, has no way of distinguishing between a home invasion by a criminal as opposed to a government agent. Too often, the destruction of life and property wrought by the police is no less horrifying than that carried out by criminal invaders. These incidents underscore a dangerous mindset in which citizens, often unarmed and defenseless, not only have less rights than the militarized police, but also one in which the safety of we the people is treated as a lower priority than the safety of their police counterparts, who are armed to the hilt with an array of lethal and non-lethal weapons. In fact, the privacy of American citizens is being destroyed by the government's various missions, and our homes, believe it or not, are no longer the refuge from government intrusion that they once were. It wasn't always this way, however. There was a time in America when a person's home was a sanctuary where he and his family could be safe and secure from the threat of invasion by government agents, who were held at bay by the dictates of our Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, which protects American citizens from unreasonable searches and seizures. The Fourth Amendment, in turn, was added to the U.S. Constitution by the colonists. They were still smarting from the abuses they had been forced to endure while under British rule. Among these, home invasions by the British military under the guise of writs of assistance. These writs were nothing less than open-ended royal documents which British soldiers used as justification for barging into the homes of colonists, the American colonists, and rifling through their belongings. Amazingly, we have now come full circle, returning to a time before the American Revolution when government agents, with the blessings of the court, could force their way into a citizen's home with seemingly little concern for the lives lost and the property damaged in the process. Actually, as I make clear in my book, Battlefield America, The War on the American People, we may be worse off today than our colonial ancestors when one considers the extent to which the courts have sanctioned the use of no-knock raids by police SWAT teams, occurring at a rate of 80,000 a year and growing. The arsenal of lethal weapons available to local police agencies, and the ease with which courts now dispense search warrants based on little more than a suspicion of wrongdoing. Winston Churchill once declared that democracy means that if the doorbell rings in the early hours, it's likely to be the milkman. Clearly, we don't live in a democracy. No, in the American police state, when you find yourself awakened from sleep in the early hours by someone pounding on your door, smashing through your door, terrorizing your family, killing your pets, and shooting you if you dare to resist in any way, You don't need to worry that it might be burglars out to rob and kill you. It's just the police.